Hi, I am Takuma Sato. You're listening F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 730, June 26th, 2017. Nasser?
Thank you, sir, and I say greetings and super racing regards from Baku to Timbuktu.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Vettel displays a classic case of road rage in Baku. Force India needs to tell their drivers who's boss, and Fernando says we should have won. Of course, this week's interview, Nasser, is with...
Cameron Doss, young American talent from Baltimore area.
Thank you, Nasser. And of course, F1 Weekly is now available on WROCK Radio streaming on WLOR.net Wednesdays at 11 p.m. and Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And of course, donations are accepted. To keep these programs on the air, just click on the donation tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you? Are you getting the Baku fever?
Oh, yeah, it's the... Fever all through the day and fever all through the night. But let me tell you, man, what a serious Pepsi Klein Grand Prix we had. Crazy from the opening lap to the final lap, and I'm still excited.
Crazy for feeling so lonely. Absolutely unbelievable. Finally, we're getting some what you call some whoop-ass on the track, and I have to take it to... the next level, when I say Sebastian Vettel is now my hero, even though he was not brake checked, the telemetry says he was not brake checked. But the one thing I have to admit, there was a lot of restraint with the red flag. I know, and I've seen Michael Schumacher try to punch David Coulthard in the face at Spa 1998. We didn't get this far, but certainly, man... it was almost NASCAR-ish.
Man, whatever it was very, very thrilling Grand Prix. I loved it. I was super excited all Sunday, and I'm still enjoying the after effects of this race. I'm going to watch it again a few times.
Yes, I've watched it a few times. The highlights on the internet are fantastic from F1.com. And I'm telling you, the restart... after the incident was so exciting between Vettel and Massa and Perez and Ocon and Ricciardo, I'm telling you, we haven't had something like this in a long, long time.
That is very, very true. So much excitement from different parts of the grid. But before we get into details, can we just say a few things about Colli? Because you, I'm sure sooner or later you will bring up my LCH love fest.
Yes, well, when I saw the results of Quali, because I did not watch it, because I'm a very, very busy man, I was disappointed, and I thought it was boring, so boring. But in the end, him being on pole is what made it so exciting.
Yeah, I had to work also, so I had to watch it later. But Lewis's pole position in the streets of Baku was at over 133 miles per hour. Very impressive on a street circuit. Now too shy of equaling Schumacher's all-time record of 68, and most probably LCH will be number one in this field by the time he's enjoying his Longhorn steak in Austin. And I know I hate to put more rain on this issue, or acid rain, but Julian Palmer was a flamer in Colli, and he is under tremendous heat both in and out of the car. And this was LCH's fifth pole position of the season, and equally impressive, This was the first time that Sebastian Vettel did not start in the top three of the grid. And the new man since Canadian Grand Prix, Lance Stroll, out-qualified Massa for the first time in his young F1 career. Now, let's get back to the race, sir. What did you think before the start?
Well, before the start, you know, there was not much to think about. I thought, you know, Mercedes front row, this could be a yawner, it could be processional. Certainly didn't expect what I thought would happen, but man, I'm telling you, everything went out the window in terms of my personal expectations, and this race was unbelievable.
Well, I thought it would be Lewis was in, you know, super form in quali. I figured street race, he's going to get ahead and he will probably win, or Ferrari will beat him again in the pit strategy. But boy, on the first corner, my thoughts went out the door because thanks to the fighting Finns.
Yes, and it's funny about Raikkonen and Bottas always causing issues.
Yeah, it's like, you know, some years ago it was Senna and Prost, then it was recently Massa and LCH. And in this case, Bottas had a bloody nose and Kimi was hit below the belt. And there was no love lost between the blue belts, too. Somehow, Carlos Sainz is having one issue after another with his teammate, another man who's under pressure. Under pressure.
Yes, and the pressure is building, especially after this Grand Prix. The interesting part, though, is with that puncture that he suffered after hitting Kimi Raikkonen, taking him to the back. That's really the beginning of the excitement in this Grand Prix.
Yeah, that's very true, and it was right after the start, so it took him a while to get back to the track, and I thought it was all over for him.
I did too, and the other thing that I was really surprised about is how many safety cars and a red flag that really, because of debris on the track.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of debris in all part of different places of the track, so, I mean, safety is important, and these things can be very dangerous, you know, so I did not have a problem with the red flag. As long as they don't do phantom caution.
Phantom cautions are going to come soon to a track near you. The entire Grand Prix was, even Magnussen had some exciting moments, brought him to the forefront. Everybody got their chance in this Grand Prix.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Kevin Magnussen did a great job. And I have no idea what's up with his teammate Romain Grosjean and his Brembo Blues. I mean, if you have an issue in a season, one can understand, you know, you have contracts with different companies and you cannot change the situation McLaren Honda is in right now. But, I mean, they should have, I think if they had taken this thing to Meineke Muffler or Pep Boys, this past team break issue should have been resolved before the season was started. And somehow it's plaguing only Grosjean. And apparently, I heard on one of the telecast that Grosjean was told by the team that, you know, hey, enough is enough.
I agree. And I think Grosjean is now suffering from the Sebastian Bourdais at Red Bull syndrome.
That's a very good way to put it. Build a car around me while the other teammate is doing very well. And Kevin Magnussen, you know, this is a kid who was lost in the shadows of Fernando Alonso flying back to McLaren. And you remember he was on the podium at his Grand Prix debut with McLaren some years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I remember him from his British Formula 3 season. You know, my friend Peter Nygaard with Grand Prix Photo, he's Danish, so he, of course, knows him very well. And he has been telling me about Kevin long before he came into British Formula 3 that he was very quick. And he was very quick, and him and Felipe Nasr won, I think, both won 7 races that season, and Felipe won the championship. And then Kevin went on to dominate World Series by Renault a couple of years later. But I would love to see. He's a good talent, you know. I've been saying that about Lance Stroll. The kid is quick. Sometimes you just have to give these people. Not everybody can perform on a rival like Senna, Schumacher, and Max Weed.
So anyway, Grosjean has troubles with Brembo, or maybe Hitco, or maybe Carbon Industries. But I don't really want to hear about it. I want to see machismo-ness like Fernando. And come on, Fernando asks for a red flag, he gets a red flag. I like his style.
Yes, and it, you know, talking of Fernando, man, it was very encouraging and spiritually uplifting to see McLaren Honda go head-to-head, side-by-side with Sauber's.
I know. Wow.
They must be taking five-hour energy now.
Well, sometimes, with five-hour energy, Fernando gets another six-tenths.
By the time they get to two-hour energy, maybe they'll finish in the top three.
Probably.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you, the way this race was going, bang here and yellow flags and red flag and debris on the track. I mean, I thought this could be a first win for Ocon. It could be a first win for Lance Stroll. I mean, so many people could have won this race.
Not only that, but Massa looked pretty good at the beginning, especially dicing it up after that restart with the front. I was going, wow, I'm really glad he did come back, because really this is a classic race that you would have wanted to be in.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. It will go down as one of the most exciting Grand Prix. And actually, you know, all the radio and podcasts, whatever telecasts I listened to, they all kept saying that they were expecting, because of the track layout, that it will be a lot of crashes and this and that. In the inaugural race, nothing happened there. It was a bore fest. And boy, this one, everybody was wide awake.
Yes, with their eyes shut.
Yes, and I have to say this about Sebastian Vettel. Do you remember some years ago when he was, I think, on his way to win the first or second championship? I believe it was the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix where he was behind Toro Rosso driver Jean-Éric Vannes, and somehow he had to take evasive action and was blaming Jean-Éric Vannes when Jean-Éric had not done anything wrong. I mean, he's you know, this is how I look at it. In this race, Lewis's headrest was coming loose, but with Sebastian Vettel, his own head was coming loose. I think he needs to tighten some screws. Will Buxton does post-race interviews on YouTube for NBC, and Sky people also do that. Will Buxton was grinding him about if it was his mistake or not, and I could not believe, you know, I understand you can get caught up in the heat of the moment, but probably people would say, like, you know, it's interesting, I just thought about this. He was adamant that he was trying to make one right from two wrong, and he would not say that, you know, I'll think about this or I'll look it over. Hate to say this again, but do you know when we had that famous Rascas parking situation, and that driver was asked, and it was the same thing. Oh, I didn't do anything wrong. I don't see anything wrong there. Wow, the whole world is wrong, huh? Except for two or three people, I guess.
But that's what happens. That's the good part about it. These people are in their own world.
Yeah, it's a very fantastic world, and we enjoy their world. But, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, unless you're at Arthur Anderson. They make it 22.
Exactly. I found it very interesting, but I really thought the interesting part was when the race was red flagged and there was an opportunity for Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel to speak to each other, they chose not to even look at each other's feet.
No, I think it was good they did not do that, because the last thing we need is fisticuffs and stuff like that. But obviously, you know, after the race, Lewis is now quoted on different websites saying that he has no interest in talking to Seb about this.
And I saw that, and I was curious, because usually, I mean, there's going to be driver meetings at the next Grand Prix. They're going to see each other. I mean, somebody's got to say something.
Yeah, and you know, if you recall what happened with Sebastian Vettel and his potty mouth against Charlie Whiting, I mean, that was also brought up. So he needs to calm down.
In other words, he needs anger management.
Well, what it is, he's desperate for a championship, and who is not? But I think he knows that he has almost as good a car as LCH. But, you know, LCH is no slouch. You know, it's Sebastian Vettel. These people really, it's a dog-eat-dog world between the two in terms of talent. And so if you have... The way I look at it this way, it was such a tremendous opportunity for Lewis to get ahead of the championship. And I think this is the first time that a race has been lost because of a headrest not installed properly or not put back properly. And for Sebastian Vettel, he is really the big loser, because if he had not done that penalty, he was going to win this race and would have had a huge lead over LCH. But it is what it is. And the show goes to Austria.
Well, not only that, but the irony is Vettel still finishes ahead of Lewis Hamilton, even with the penalty.
Yeah, the penalty was, again, I don't know what the regulations are, but, you know, when you do something like this, which is deliberate, a 10-second penalty is pretty, he got off pretty easily. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, but a lot of people aren't talking about the 3 points that were put on his super license or whatever you might want to call it. So he's actually very, very close. One more incident, and we could have a race ban on Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, but I think it runs from year to year. It's like a 12-month period. So his penalty, he has till the British Grand Prix to behave.
I agree.
Yeah, it would be something if he's told to step out of a race. But, you know, hey, step down from a race. You know, we'll see how it goes. What about the Pink Panther clashing again?
Oh, my God. The Ocon and the Perez circus continues. And I don't understand who's in charge at Force India. I mean, maybe they should change their name. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah, you know, this thing, the young Pinky Esteban Ocon made a move on Perez. And then forgot Walls and Baku don't move. And according to Esteban, this was a racing accident. The flip side of the coin, Perez, of course, had a different view. But from the team's point of view, this could have been an historic 1-2. You know, at least a win, if not a 1-2. But, you know, the thing is, this guy, Esteban said that I was on the inside when we turned right. But then when they turned left, he left his own teammate no room. There was no room. You know, the walls were not flexible. And lucky that he was able to continue and, you know, go and finish some points.
I agree. I think Ocon is very, very talented and is not going to be intimidated by anybody like Perez, former McLaren driver, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, Perez is, you know, he thinks he's number one and doesn't believe that Ocon should be challenging him. So what you get is the clash of the Titans.
Yeah, both of them have done a pretty good job. You know, Sergio Perez has really established himself as, like Nico Hülkenberg, that he needs to stay. You know, he's F1 worthy. And then Esteban Ocon is doing what, you know, Max Verstappen was doing last year, knocking on doors, and the door came down, you know, last year for Max in Spain. And I think Esteban, his goal for this season is to get a podium, and I think he will get that. But I have to say, the first 20 laps of this race were looking like the last 20 laps of an NASCAR race, crash and bang, debris on the track. And only thing missing was Kyle Busch and, of course, the great racer, Danica Patrick.
And a shoe.
Oh, yes. That would have been in Montreal. You just can't let go of that Montreal shoe, huh?
I cannot. Love the shoey. And, of course, now when I say the shoey, it means Daniel Ricciardo. But in the end, I was also, you know, I felt bad for Sainz Jr., always getting in the thick of it at the beginning of the race. Almost lost it, but this time didn't hit the wall. Daniel Kvyat, he stops on the track. Another yellow flag and safety car, because really, they're not as well equipped as Monaco when it comes to getting cars off this particular course.
Yeah, because there are historical buildings there and there are trees there. And plus, Monaco, they've been doing this for like, what, 70 years now?
I read about that.
Yeah, something like that. But, I think I get the impression from, you know, reading and hearing about different news and views that there are two drivers who are really trying hard to get out of their contract. One of them is Carlos Sainz Jr. Apparently, Ferrari is interested in his services. And the other is Max Verstappen.
Speaking of Max Verstappen, how could it happen again?
I think he has had, like, four DNS in the last 6 races. And lately, you know, he's been doing very good in terms of qualifying against Daniel Ricciardo. But Christian Horner was asked if he will lose Ricciardo or Verstappen this year. And he said, we have a solid contract. And they asked him, you know, so did Sebastian Vettel, but he was able to get out of last year deal. And Christian Horner said that Sebastian Vettel had a clause after he had won 2 championships, which was based on performance clause, you know, performance by the team. And since the team was not performing, he was able to trigger that clause and get the exit. But he said, these are on their junior driver program. They are locked in. But, you know, there's always a price for everything. If Max says, I don't want to drive because Ferrari is giving me $30 million, maybe they'll take $25 million and let him go.
Yeah.
Or we can have those issues, you know, like we had with Button or even Michael Schumacher trying to take, Roberto Morone's seat at Benetton. So I think there's a lot more behind these stories than what we know out in the press right now.
Yep. So the crash and bang, were you surprised? I mean, I remember Montoya doing some funny business in the tunnel in Monaco. But this, I was surprised to see Vettel in the first place hit the rear of Hamilton's car.
That part I can understand. You know, this has happened in different formula over the years in important events. I remember it happened at the Formula BMW World Finals. And I believe it was Nico Hülkenberg who did a brake check on the competition after during a yellow, and he was, you know, stripped off his win or something like that. So these things have happened. That I can understand. You run into somebody, and maybe it was LCH's fault, but the stewards are saying he did not do a brake check on him. But to go side by side and, you know, do a hip check, I mean, what was he thinking? I mean, he could have done more damage on his car. I mean, can you imagine if he had done that and he dropped out of the race for some technical issues or, damage, and LCH had won the race? I mean, you have to think, what you're doing.
Yeah, but in those moments of rage, I don't think there's much thinking involved, but certainly the entertainment value goes up.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, like they say, you know, it's always been written about how Gerhard Berger got along very well with Ayrton Senna. The reason he got along very well is he was no threat to Ayrton Senna, you know. I mean, can you imagine if they had thrown Kimi Raikkonen when he first came into Formula One into Ferrari as teammate to Michael Schumacher? I mean, that would have been a serious bloodbath.
Very true.
Or it would be in any, situation. I mean, if you throw Sebastian as in place of Bottas or Alonso or Max Verstappen, oh boy, then it will be real news, you know.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. The interesting part is going to be what happens in Austria, which is a nice track.
Yes, and Mr. Bottas, he must have earned himself a bag of brownie points from Toto and Nicky for his drive and his last lap charge to spear Lance's second place in the final seconds of the race. Was very, very impressive. And I believe Bottas has been on the podium in like 5 of the 6 races this season, which basically means if this kind of performance continues, there will be a no vacancy sign later in the season. If Alonso drives by in his Honda Ridgeline, who knows, by then he may have a new company car, perhaps a Renault Megane. Time will tell.
Oh boy. And you know, McLaren, they are... Okay, they scored their first point. I'm just so happy for them. But and occasionally, as you know, I bring up the Peugeot part of McLaren that happened back in 1994. But even in that relationship, McLaren achieved 8 podium finishes and was 4th in the constructors. So even Honda's making Peugeot look fantastic.
Yeah, this is... I have no words to explain what has happened here. I mean, first year one can understand. Even second year they made a lot of improvement, but instead of being 4 seconds behind, they were 2 seconds. So at least progress is moving forward. But this season is just beyond total disaster.
Yes, and don't get me wrong, the engines back in '94 were much more. I don't want to say simple, but they were normal.
They were like humans. They would fail every now and then.
Yes, and of course, Peugeot, not a great F1 engine builder, but certainly had much better reliability than we have with Honda today.
Yeah, and I believe that program was run by or headed by Jean-Pierre Jabouille, I remember correctly.
I think you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, and this guy, Joe Ramirez, wrote in his book that him and everything was lovey-dovey. Before the contract was signed, once the contract was signed, Jabouille and Ron Dennis could not agree on anything.
That's so, because Ron Dennis hates the French.
Yeah, and it could be a mutual love affair too. But it's one of those things, man. Be careful what you wish for. This might come true.
So very, very true. But please, let's continue as I digressed.
Well, Okay, Lance on the podium will have same effect as Pastor winning in a Williams. It will shut up a lot of people. Yes, he was lucky, but still, to borrow a phrase from Damon Hill, you have to do the business even if you have the best car. And Stroll, I have to say, drove a race like an experienced pro. Good for him and Mr. Pito. He is now the second youngest driver to be on podium after Max V. And the thing is, you know, just a few weeks ago, he scored his first championship points on home soil. So I'm very happy for him. I want to see all good racing talent succeed. It's good for the sport. It's good for them. And it's good for people like us, you know, who report on these things.
Absolutely. And not only that, but with Paddy Lowe going back to where he started at Williams with all the success he had at Mercedes with three world championships, this makes Paddy Lowe look good. It makes Lance Stroll look good. It makes Williams look good because they don't get on the podium very often. And Lance really has the opportunity to take a leadership role as a driver in this team and wave goodbye to Felipe Massa as he, you know, once again will retire, I assume, at the end of this season.
Well, you know, if Lance can race and finish like he has done in the if he can put on the performances he has done in the past 2 years, past two races, then I think they will give the pink slip to Felipe Massa at the end of the season. And there is not a lot of talent out there that's available. When I say available, meaning who are not on the books of you know, driver program, Ferrari, or other teams. But I can see Massa being there for another year. But if Lance keeps doing what he's doing, then, you know, they might say sayonara to Massa.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got some coming talent through for instance, Formula 2 with Leclerc doing an outstanding job. So there's people coming.
Yeah, but some of them are taken, and we'll discuss this more on the MM. And so shall we do a brief final analysis on the Azerbaijan Grand Prix?
If that's possible, please.
Yes, sir, because we have a fully loaded burrito today, a lot of other exciting information. So final analysis, Azerbaijan Grand Prix, Baku on the Bay is a beautiful sight. I was impressed. I was flying last year overseas, from overseas, so I missed the Grand Prix last year. Move of the race, I have to say, was Danny Boy passing both Williams after the restart following the red flag. And this was his, that was a race-winning move. Did that impress you, sir?
Oh, I was not only impressed, but it was so dominant. It was so, I mean, it was not only a great move, but it was a decisive move, putting him into the lead. Once Hamilton had to pit for a new Scooby-Doo. I was very impressed. It was not Mika Hakkinen at Spa, but certainly a great move.
Yeah, and this was win number 5 in the life and showy times of Mr. Ricciardo, his first since Malaysia last year. And even at that race, it was Lewis Hamilton whose engine went and blowed up and allowed Ricciardo to win. So good for him. Race winner had this to say about numero uno at Maranello and his ex-teammate. Sebastian Vettel must put a lid on emotion, and I think a lot of people will have to agree with Ricciardo on this. Driver of the race, voted by fans, was Lance Stroll. I think it was a pretty good choice. For me, it was either him or Bottas. He kept going, and, you know, he just beat him at the start-finish line.
But I heard everybody who voted for Lance Stroll got $10.
Oh, I mean, so cheap, huh? That was a great deal negotiated by Lawrence Stroll, I have to say.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay, sir. Points now. Top three, Sebastian Vettel, despite all his problem, increased the lead. He's now 153 points to 139 over LCH. And Valtteri Bottas is third with 111. And in the constructors, Mercedes, 250 points, leading the way. Second, Ferrari, 226. Third, Red Bull, 137 points. You have any last words on the Azerbaijan Baku Grand Prix?
Well, I know one thing. Hate is good for racing. We know that. And Austria is going to be great. And Vettel has got a temper problem. And we saw it last year. We're seeing it this year. And we're seeing it engaged in the proper way against LCH. So I'm a happy guy, and this is going to make the championship fight go down to the wire because they both hate each other, just like Alan Prost and Ayrton Senna did. So this is good for the sport. I'm excited. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, in the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Yes, sir. Today, the first stop on the spinning Mondial is Hinwil, Switzerland. What did you make of this thing? Monisha moved out of Sauber.
I was pretty surprised, but Sauber is having a lot of issues. They're having financial issues. That's a tough team to keep together.
Yeah, but you know, since this new investment group came, which I believe has been brought in courtesy of Marcus Ericsson, because they have a Swedish background, I thought, initially when they said that Monisha will stay in her place, I figured there will be some announcement that, okay, at the end of the season, she's going to leave. But this was a big surprise. And apparently the rumor floating around is that, and I don't know if it's true or not, that they, being a Swedish company, wanted her to, you know, basically promote or take care of Marcus Ericsson, lack of a better word, show favoritism, and she was not interested in that. Whether this is true or not, you know, we may never find out. But we'll see how it goes. She was there for a long time. You know, her background is a lauer by profession. She came to Sauber. There's a Swiss group, I believe it's Kaiser Group. Okay, next we shall talk about Formula 2, previously known as Hapidos, which I miss very much now. But anyway, it's FIA Formula 2, Charles Leclerc of Monaco leading the way. And what a season he is having. Only man to win pole position this year so far. He won both races in Baku, which is quite an achievement, but lost victory in Sunday's sprint. And you were talking about him being available. You know, he's under contract to Ferrari, and he is scheduled to do some free practice times with Haas team, which I believe he has done one or two already. But I, you know, normally they say Ferrari don't bring rookies, but this guy could be very well prepared to replace Kimi Raikkonen.
I'll believe it when I see that, Nasser, because right now everything points to Kimi still being at Ferrari next year.
Yeah, that's what I think. And I won't be surprised if Romain Grosjean, I was surprised he was talking in a pre-race interview that, you know, he has done whatever he could and he is in line if the call comes in from Maranello. I will be surprised if they replace Kimi Raikkonen with Romain Grosjean, especially with all the issues he's having with the brakes now.
Yeah, I agree. Romain Grosjean is now becoming his own enemy.
Yeah, I think there has been a lot of complaining on that issue. Okay, so anyway, the F2 circus, it will be in tandem with Formula One racing again in Austria, and we shall cover that also. Now we go to IndyCar racing. They were at the beautiful Road America circuit in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, and I'm very, very happy that they have brought IndyCars back to this track. Castro Neves on pole for Team Penske, and it was first time in ages, probably in decades, that Captain was not at the track on race weekend. I hope he is doing well. Nothing was said what he's doing. But whatever it is, I hope he's in good shape and look forward to seeing him at the track soon. Kiwi Scott Dixon was the winner over man from Tennessee, Joseph Newgarden. Dixon leads the championship over Simon Pagenaud, 376 to 345. I know how much you like NASCAR and IndyCar. Did you watch anything, any of it?
I watched the Road America. Great track, fantastic facility. And what I do now is when I'm watching IndyCar, I pretend that I'm Fernando watching IndyCar and trying to get his thing on, you know, does he want to be there? Is it exciting, you know? Because some of these road tracks are fantastic.
Oh, yeah, Road America circuit is, I think, in just my humble opinion, it's better than, I would say, as is half of the F1 track, more than half of the F1 track they go to. It's just a fantastic facility. Obviously, it's not up to F1 standards, so they cannot race there. But as a racing track, it's fantastic. This track and Road Atlanta, I think they are the best in the U.S., and Circuit of America is also very, very nice.
Very true, and we will, F1 will be at Circuit of the Americas very soon.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Okay, so we talked about the points. Now we go to, this was another doozy. MotoGP, Rossi in a Dutch thriller at Assen. First win of the season for the doctor. Danilo Petrucci was second, and Marc Marquez was third. Your homeboy, Johann Zarco, started from pole but came in 14th after serving a penalty for speeding in pit lane. In the closing stages, you know, a lot of time we have all Spanish riders because there are so many good Spanish riders in MotoGP. But in the closing stages, we also had a situation, the whole podium was Italiano, but then it got changed when Marquez took the third spot. Fantastic race. I have not watched the whole race. I watched a little bit on YouTube, but once my excitement from Azerbaijan subsides, then I will watch the MotoGP in full. Okay, in the championship, Andrea Dovizioso, Italian, of course, leading with 115 points. Maverick Vinales, he crashed out. He is second, 111 points. And the Dr. Rossi is on 108 points. There you have some information. I heard that you were at the NASCAR race at Sears Point.
It was exciting.
Did you really go there?
No, but I was there spiritually. Yeah. And I'm waiting for them to invite me so I could announce any kind of caution.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
Wouldn't that be great to be the caution announcer?
Yeah. Yeah, you can do a podcast on NASCAR called Le Caution.
Caution Weekly?
Yeah, Caution Weekly. That would be good.
That's good. Or Phantom Caution.
Yeah, that was also beautiful. Okay, sir, are we ready for this interview with Mr. Cameron Das now?
Absolutely. Let's bring it up, Nass.
Okay, Cameron Das is a young American talent. Last year, he was runaway champion in the U.S. Formula 4 Series. This season, he's already a race winner in the highly competitive British F3 Championship with Carlin Motorsports, one of the best teams in that area. Cameron is from Baltimore area, and I first met him and his parents at the St. Petersburg IndyCar race. It was good to see him in action at Snetterton and chat with his mom and dad. And this is where this conversation took place, Snetterton, courtesy of European electrified European support vehicle and Mr. Brazier. So please enjoy this conversation and also check out his website. Thank you.
Okay, folks, we are here at Snetterton with young rising American talent, Mr. Cameron Das. Cameron, good to see you again. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. Thanks.
Okay, now I understand you have done so far 8 races and 5 times you've been on the podium, which is very impressive. Is the season going ahead of expectations, or what do you think?
Yeah, I didn't really know what to expect for the beginning of the season, but obviously it's been a really good start. We haven't had quite as good of a start as Enam, but obviously I don't know the tracks as well as he does. I can't complain about the results we've had so far.
Okay, now while I was reading about you, interesting thing and very impressive is you have not done a lot of racing, but you came up to speed very quickly and started winning very quickly in the U.S. Tell us a little bit about what kind of racing school and racing series you did with Bertil Roos and PA.
Yeah, so I started with Bertil Roos in their 5-day race school back in March of 2015. And then the summer after that, I started dabbling in some like Formula 1600, Formula Atlantic, some like majors races. And then the next year, I started USF 2000 and their second weekend, which I think was Barber in April or so in 2016. And F4 was after that. So yeah, it's all been quite new to me, I think.
Did you do any karting at all?
No, just indoor karting. I did for about three or four months before I went to Bertel Roos. So the indoor electric karts, like a ride and drive kind of thing, but with Autobahn Indoor Speedway. But before that, no outdoor karting.
And how did you develop interest in motorsport? Was that interest in the family, or this is your own idea?
No, it definitely wasn't an interest. We have a lot of car fanatics in my family, but we weren't really into motorsports at the time. But then once I went karting, I kind of got hooked into the idea of racing and started watching it, started meeting people that were also into racing as well, and I made a lot of connections that allowed me to pursue it in a professional kind of career.
Now, America, you know, there's a lot of racing series, stock car, Indy cars, drag racing. What made you got interested in European racing instead of like going to Indy cars or NASCAR?
The thing that really interests me about F1 was the fact that it's a manufacturer sport. It's as much a driver as it is the manufacturer. And the technical aspect of it is something that really, really interests me. And it actually interested me before I was interested in driving. So I think a driver is really key to the development of F1 cars. And so I'd really like to get to F1 to be a key component of the team. And that's something that IndyCar does have a little bit, but not to the same extent that F1 does.
Okay, now U.S. Formula 4, you know, this is an FIA incentive, Formula 4 all over the world, which is very good. Tell us a little bit about this. How long it took for you to get up to speed in that, and who were some of your big competitors there, at least in the first half of the season?
In F4, sorry?
Yeah, USF.
Yeah, in F4, it took me about a weekend to get up to speed. Testing, we did okay, but we only got, like, I think maybe two test days before the season because of, you know, it's a brand new series and they were working on logistical things. So the first weekend, everybody had no idea what to do. We were all working on car setup, basically. That was our first time. And so I think after a weekend, the team managed to get the car together. I sort of understood how to drive the car a little bit better. And the second weekend, I could really start to press on against the top guys who had a lot of experience in, you know, Skip Barber and Formula 1600 and those kind of series.
Coming so new into racing without much karting experience, what was the real, like, pleasant surprises for you that came very easily for you or naturally? And what were some of, let's just say, things that you did not think would be so frustrating?
Yeah, definitely on the races that I didn't start first or that maybe I lost positions on the start, getting back up to there was something that I didn't expect I'd be able to do, not having done much racing experience. Because even in indoor karts, there is a little bit of a procession as well because it's such a tight track. So yeah, definitely the speed at which I've understood passing surprised me, but it also is a little bit... I'd say over here it's much more difficult to find pace because the competition is that much higher and everyone's been racing for that much longer than people start in the U.S. So I'd say it's more difficult to find pace over here than it was in the U.S. But I've been surprised at how well I've been able to race.
Yeah, I'm very impressed, and I hope it continues that way. Okay, next question I have is, if I remember correctly, you won more than half the races, 9 races, I believe, in U.S. Formula 4. And of those 9 races, 8 of them were consecutive wins. What clicked in the second half that you were so dominant?
I think it was mostly confidence. In the beginning of the season, obviously I maybe had a total of maybe 5 race starts or a little more than 5 race starts in USF 2000 before that. So it was more of like a butterflies in the stomach, nervous, and, you know, I just, my head wasn't fully in the game yet. And then second half of the season, I just said, I know I have the pace. We've seen it in testing. I've done it in qualifying. Now I just need to go out and just have a demon start. And once I'm ahead for one lap, then I'll probably be ahead for most of the race. And yeah, it was just a mindset thing, really.
Now, you also did some races in U.S. Formula 2000. What's the difference between that car and the U.S. Formula 4 car?
Yeah, so the new USF 2000 car is a lot less aero than this car is, less horsepower. So it's more along the lines of a Formula 4 car, I'd say, in terms of pace and driving technique and that kind of thing. But this car really requires a knowledge of aerodynamics, and it's really important, especially in the racing, that you understand that, because if you have too much of your wing sort of covered by the car in front, you're just not going to be able to keep up with someone in front of you, even if you have better pace.
Mom and Dad fully behind your career?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they've been tremendous in their support, and they try and make it to almost every race. So I can't be any more gracious for their support.
Now, do you have a manager managing your career? Tell us a little bit about that side of your racing life.
Yeah, so I didn't have any sort of connections over here in Europe when I was thinking about going over here. So we were introduced to a manager. His name's Horia Totu with Sportline Management. And he introduced me to Carlin, a few other teams, and as well as specific engineers that were independent and things like that. And he quickly brought me up to speed with teams, drivers, championships, and that's something that was definitely necessary, I think, because otherwise we would have been sort of a chicken with our head cut off, not knowing what to do, because it is so expansive over here compared to the U.S., I think.
Okay, now, in American racing, Mazda has a very fantastic program, Mazda Road to Indy, and they basically subsidize if you win a championship. Obviously, you bypassed on that. Any reason you did not want to go on that, at least for a year or two, and then move directly to Europe like you did?
No, I definitely consider going back over there. I just think that because of there being a new car this year and a new car next year, it's really hard to know which team to go with, because in testing everything was so split up. I mean, there was like 4 second differences between some cars, so, and I know that's not the actual pace of that team, so it's just more of a let's go where we know we can be competitive. We know there's good drivers over here for sure. We know there are proven drivers, so let's develop over here for as long as I can. I want to get to F1, so you kind of have to be over here to do that. And we'll see how well it goes for a few years, and then maybe we'll go back to Indy Lights or IndyCar eventually. So.
Okay. You mentioned about Inam Ahmed. Obviously, he is in his second year and far more racing experience than you have, at least as of now. Having somebody in his second year and more experience than you within the same team, do you see it as a plus, or is it more of a competition for you, or something that you would rather have him be in some other team? How do you look at it?
No, I was really happy when I heard Inam signed, because I knew he was quick last year, so he's going to be even quicker this year. And having someone like that really allows you to push yourself, and it forces you to go beyond your limits, which is something that I didn't have as much last year. And it was more I have to do it on my own, but having someone to push you really expedites the process.
Now, Carlin is obviously one of the most successful teams in Europe for many, many years. Tell us, how is your working relationship with your engineer and other team players?
Yeah, my engineer trusts my feedback, and he always seems to know which direction to go based on my feedback. So it's been really good with the team. They keep the car in pristine condition. I've never, ever had a problem with the car. So, I really couldn't complain as a driver. It's exactly the team that I want to be with.
Okay, being a first year in Europe and first year in British F3, of course, winning is always the goal. But realistically, what kind of a result at the end of the season you'll say, okay, I'm happy.
Yeah.
This is what I got. What would it make you happy?
At the beginning of the season, I thought to myself, well, I want to be consistently top three by the end of the season. And I think at this point, I've proven that I am a top three driver within the series, I think. So, I'll definitely be going for the championship. It'll be tough with Enom, especially already having a bit of a points lead. But we're definitely in the mix, and I think a top three championship finish is definitely possible, and I think it's a reasonable goal.
Yeah, and I wish you all the best. This season, obviously, you're committed to British F3. Maybe at the end of the season or when you have a break, do you have any plans to maybe do some other rounds, European F3 rounds, or maybe Formula Renault, or maybe a couple of races in the U.S.? Do you have any other plans of doing some additional races?
Nothing planned at the moment, but very soon we'll be thinking about next year and what are the steps we need to take to be successful next year. So I wouldn't doubt that I do something else. I just don't have anything set in stone at the moment.
Okay. Now, We thank you for your time and wish you all the best. Finally, how about a message to our listeners? Tell us something about yourself, Clown Racing, and what you like, music, food-wise, and tell us about your website so they can go and check out what's happening with you.
Well, thank you for interviewing me, of course. My social media is @CameronDoss for Instagram and Twitter, and Cameron Doss Racing for Facebook. My website is CameronDoss.com. But something I'm also interested in is technology in general, filmmaking, photography. I'm a technical, analytical kind of person, so when it comes to car setup and things like that in the racing world, that's another kind of pastime is learning, learning how cars work mechanically and stuff like that. But also filmmaking was another big passion I had before, and I won a few film festivals before I started racing, and I'm not as into filmmaking now as I am because I'm so focused on racing, but it's still a big passion I have.
So let's just say if you have a choice to become Robert Redford or Daniel Ricciardo, which way would you go?
Right now, I'd go Daniel Ricciardo. Yeah.
Okay, good choice, even though Robert Redford is a good man. Thank you so much, and all the best to you.
Thank you very much.
Cameron, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Keep up the good work, NAS. And now, I'm going to read a few comments from the F1Weekly.com listeners' Facebook page. Here we go. Peter Brazier says, that was quite exciting. Leon Bray says, certainly a different race with unexpected results. Looks like Seb went to the Michael Schumacher School of Fair Play. Great drives from the back of the field. Mark Farrington, thoroughly enjoyable race with a popular podium with some skillful jousting up and down the field. Seb's not only throwing toys out of the pram this season, but cannoning the pram into his rivals, which bodes well for further entertainment in the remaining races. So there you have it, a couple of comments from the F1 Weekly listeners on the F1Weekly.com listeners group page on Facebook.com. So that would be Facebook/groups, blah, 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 blah. There you go, NAS. Keep up the good work. And now we're going to Austria. It's exciting. And boy, I mean, we're going to be talking about we're going to be talking about Baku once we get to Austria.
Yeah, and I think looks like, you know, Mercedes is getting their mojo back. Obviously, they don't have the upper hand they had the last few years. But one prediction I will make, that if this championship is going down to the last race, okay, then do expect what happened between Prost and Senna and Senna and Prost at Suzuka 2 years in a row. That's my two yens for the evening.
Wow, wow. Well, I'm not going to go that far. But, well, you know, Fernando could have won a championship, but a Russian guy got in the way.
Oh, yes. And he saw a Spanish bird fly at the Yas Marina circuit.
So,
you know, I'll tell you, I remember this. I was in Abu Dhabi. I went to the track on Saturday. Sunday night, I was at my friend's house. He has no interest in racing. And when Alonso was running behind Petrov, he says to me, who will win the championship? I said, oh, this Spanish guy is going to pass this Russian guy. And he will be champion. And then after, 10 minutes, he said, well, he still hasn't passed him. I said, don't worry, the Russian guy will crash or go off or do something silly, and Nando will be champion. I could not believe that Petrov held him back. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. But we've seen funny things in the past in Formula One, and we will continue to see funny things in the future. So I'm expecting a lot of craziness. And, of course, we forgot to mention the penalties that McLaren took. 30 place for one guy. Fernando had a 40 place grid penalty. We need to get these rules fixed really soon. Because what difference does it make? Their engine is barely going to make the race. So why penalize a team that's suffering so much already?
You know, that thing, hopefully with Ross Brawn being coming back, will go away, that nonsense. And hopefully there will be more noise from the engine. So we'll see how this thing works out. But this, you know, to throw 40 grid penalty, places penalty, this is, I don't even know what to call it. It's not at the top level. You don't do this kind of bullshit at the top level of motorsports, or any sports for that matter.
No, I completely agree. So, any predictions for Austria?
You know, I think the Mercedes upper hand will continue, and we all know what that means in terms of race driver, even though Bottas is doing a very good job, but I think that Lewis will have the upper hand there. And I sooner or later, we're going to have a race or two in the rain where we may have some craziness going like Baku. So I'm looking forward to more excitement.
Okay, I can dig it.
Let me ask you a question. Who will finish second and third behind Nando in Austria?
That's a really good question. And I'm telling you, Ricciardo is second, Bottas is third.
And then this time, Lewis runs his car into Sebastian Vettel's Ferrari?
Correct. The shenanigans are not going to stop.
Yeah, no, they will intensify if this is a close chance. Because, you know, both of these drivers, they are very capable of, let's just put it this way, down and dirty.
Not only that, but remember the pass that Vettel did in Canada trying to get around the Force Indias. It was dangerous. It was tough. We haven't seen nothing from Vettel. The best is yet to come. He's brutal. He's nuts. He's crazy. He's full of hate, and he wants to win.
Wow. Quite a essay on him.
I know. I'm sending him a shirt, and the shirt's just going to say one thing. Caution!
Yeah, well, you know, his pass in the Canada was incredible. Fantastic. And just the pass, you know, when I saw that replay of Ricciardo passing the two Williams, I mean, you could not believe a guy could make a pass like this on a street circuit, go so deep in braking, and then come out without fishtailing the car or losing at least one place. So, I mean, the best drivers make the best moves once in a while.
Yeah, and the late braking does make for a good move.
Oh, yeah.
So,
fantastic. To do this on a street circuit, I have to say.
Yes, no, it was a great race. I loved every minute of it. I think Austria is going to be a great, tight race. And once again, Fernando will be on the podium because I'm back in that mood.
That's very good.
Thank you very much. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Shut your mouth.
What I'm talking about, Sharon.
Man, we can do it. He's a complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.
John Jack.